McKibben.
Billville, the town that nature forgot to hate. Bill
McKibben.
Billville, you moved to Billville because it's your fate.
Bill McKibben has, he was most famous book, I think, was The End of Nature. And I thought it should be A War on Nature would be a title. But it's a subject you revisit in your new book, Falter. Has the human game begun to play itself out? Falter, has the human game begun to play itself out? And, it's not really a dystopian vision of things, but it certainly raises the possibility of humans being expendable as a presence on the earth. And I want to, there's a lot to talk about in this book. It's alarming. And by the way, and not just because it's alarming, because you bring such credibility to it and it is extremely well written. Let me just put that out there right now as somebody who stayed up all night finishing it. I was grateful that it's so well written. And it is, as of this coming Sunday or when we're recording this, a New York Times bestseller. So congratulations. That will ensure that at least some people read it, and that will be helpful. And I just want to begin with the arc of this book. It once again lays out a compelling case that we're really way behind on this question of climate change. It may be hopeless. We may not recover. And then it goes in this odd arc to a question of robots, artificial intelligence, the fantasies of Silicon Valley. And there's really kind of two sets of problematic, if not demons, in this book. One are the libertarians who inform the old fossil fuel industry, the Koch brothers and so forth, and Ayn Rand, for those who don't know her, the Fountainhead and Atlas Shrugged and so forth. And there you could really talk about a war on nature. I mean, you quote from the Fountainhead and so forth, these compelling scenes about the individual man who, you know, also seems to be at war with women, but also with nature and how to control nature. And then we move from that old technology of fossil fuel and the Koch brothers, we move to Silicon Valley, where these people are much more enlightened about current social issues, gender, and so forth. But then they harbor all kinds of fantasies of life without humans, and also bringing back a few important humans who can come up with, what, a couple $100,000 to freeze their bodies and so forth.
I'm not in town for fun. I'm in town because Mr. Foster died and we're freezing him.
He's going to be Mr. Foster Freeze then,
that's
right?
That's ridiculous.
That's true,
but that just happened.
I'm sorry, that's cruel. That's very cruel.
It is. It's true and it's cruel. We're going to freeze him, and then we're going to charge admission to come and see it. We're going to put it in the basement. We figure it's the only way we can afford it.
Well, tell me, are you going to freeze him by normal cryogenic methods?
Yes, we're going to cryogenic methods. We kill him first, and then we freeze him.
Oh, he's not dead?
No, you can't freeze a live person. It's not allowed.
That's murder.
Yes, so we have to.
He's alive and well? I mean,
he's fine.
He's in good shape.
You'd like to meet him? Here he is.
Hiya, Pete. Hiya.
Mr. Foster, you don't mind if I just open this up to general discussion?
Call me Frosty.
Okay. Hey, Frosty, are you aware of the fact that your wife has designs on your life?
Oh, she's crazy as a coot, you know.
I know, but...
She
put away the money for it and just sprung it on me last week.
Well,
you want me to tell it or you want to tell it?
No, go ahead, John.
Okay. She sprung it on me, the dear little thing, and what was I going to say? I wept, for a long time, and they collect the tears, you know.
They do.
Oh, yeah, that's what they freeze. Yeah,
they do, really, orphans' tears. It's good luck, you know.
Right, indeed. Yeah. Most of the tears they get, in fact, are from orphans and refugees.
Sure. They're orphans, particularly.
Refugees.
And they freeze their parents often first to make orphan tears.
Yeah, yeah. God, it's a great...
If it's good enough for Walt Disney, it's good enough for my John.
Do you want me to...
You're going to freeze your John, too? You could invite people to come into that, too.
Foul-minded pervert.
Well, that's because of all the chickens I've been straightening lately.
Well, I'll just sit down. I'm certainly glad you guys let me come.
Watch out for the cheese line.
This story was based on true happenings, and the thread of it is the escape of a young Union soldier.
So, for me, this book, despite being extremely well written and obviously you're a good editor, I was troubled by this arc. So take us through it.
Sure. You know, I was thinking back to when I was writing The End of Nature, which, as you say, was the first book about what we now call climate change. And at the time, the book was a warning. 30 years ago, if you looked carefully, you could tell what was coming. If you talked to the scientists who knew the most about what was going on, it was possible to predict the trouble we were in. But you couldn't take a picture of it yet. It was still abstract and somewhat distant. I think that the rise of advanced forms of artificial intelligence and of human genetic engineering are also existential threats, the way that climate change is. And I think that they're sort of right now where we were with climate change 30 years ago, a place where if you squint, you can tell what's likely to be coming. And so maybe this time we might actually think about these things as a society before it was too late, not after.
I'm trying to understand the fantasy that some super wealthy person in Silicon Valley might entertain about this.
Well,
they preserve their body.
Take the one that's most advanced here, human genetic engineering. As you know, in October, a Chinese doctor actually produced the first two designer babies that the planet's ever seen, a pair of twin girls.
Good morning. Those are the headlines. Now the rumors behind the news.
Who needs
the Here in a satellite report bounced from Cloud 3 is reporter Felix Paparazzi.
Ocelots, poppers, pike nipples, palumbras, pizzas, Armenian gardens, thanks juggernaut, Leviathan, mix swell. This is George Tirebiter, Camden N200R. I want to order pizza to go and no anchovies. What? Oh, man, nobody will come up here at all.
Arius, Dr. General. Oh, not Arius. It's a matter of personal taste.
Adam, 1-3's incipient negritude will come as a pleasant surprise to his honorary aquarium parents, Ralph Bunch and Ida Lupino.
There's no mystery about what these guys are planning. They talk about it all the time. The enormous industry that there could be in improving human beings, in producing, allowing you to go into the clinic, as the one of these guys after another says, go into the clinic and with sufficient funds, choose the specs for your new child while they're in embryo, tinker with their genes. And I mean, there are obvious practical problems with that. I mean, in a world as unequal as ours, this would obviously etch that inequality into our, you know, very DNA.
You don't have to cheat on the SATs. You can just
redesign
the brain.
Exactly right.
Get the perfect
score. It's the same people who are...
doing this from the University of Southern California, but I didn't mean to pick on our school.
This is a sensitive subject.
No, because it affected Yale. It affected Stanford. Affected a lot of other places. So I think it affected Stanford. I'm not sure.
So that's part of it. But, you know, there's a much deeper question there. In the end, what worries me is the fragility of very important things. And I think that just as the planet itself turned out to be physically vulnerable in ways that were hard for us to imagine, so human meaning turns out to be vulnerable. Imagine that you're the child of parents affluent enough to have, say, monkeyed around with your serotonin and dopamine levels when you were an embryo, which is well within the realm of the possible, not a fantastic idea. You have no idea whether it's because of something that happened or because it's your spec kicking in, you know? And then imagine the kind of things that attend turning people into products. Imagine that you're a young couple and you go into the clinic and you spend what money you have to get as good a child as you can. And then 5 years later, you're ready for your second child and you go back into the clinic and technology has marched on and maybe you've gotten a little more money anyway and now you can afford a better set of upgrades. What does that make your first kid? Your first kid is, you know, Windows 2000, iPhone 6. It's hard for us to imagine that human meaning is something not to be taken for granted, because for the 10,000 years of human history, humans have been largely the same creatures. But it was hard for us to imagine that, you know, we were going to melt half the ice in the Arctic, too.
Well, welcome back to Fishing for Schnucks.
Sure you get your hook.
And we're out in the same boat as usual, me and my same old buddies, under a beautiful full moon out here on Lake Congaroo. It's a beautiful night.
Beautiful night. Beautiful night.
And we're fishing for snook with live spit beetles.
Oh, wait. I got a bite,
Oh, you got something there?
Ow!
Oh.
Me. Come on,
breathe
in.
Beautiful.
It's breaking the water. What the hell is that? It's like a giant iron shrimp with
Wait a minute.
Big old postage stamp on it.
Yeah, I've seen pictures of it. It's the old Thai Food Mary sign, you know, from that place that...
Sorry Square.
Yeah.
Well, boys, we could be lucky. We must be right over the old mall.
Lucky?
So, you know, well, the schnook lack cover, so we could get lucky.
Well, tell me, what do they feed on, these schnook lack?
The mayor.
Maybe that doctor guy.
No, he's poisoned all the way through.
Yeah, it's probably the developer guy.
Oh, could be the coach.
No, hey, you remember we got one of his shoes yesterday?
Weighed a ton.
It's under 18 inches, though.
Had to throw it back.
Yep.
Them old boys must be pretty big by now.
Big.
Big.
Wait a minute.
I think I got something here.
Yes, sir.
You got it on.
I'm bringing it up.
It's like a dead squirrel.
Oh, no. No. I've been to New York. That's somebody's hairpiece.
Oh,
throw it out. Okay.
Let it live.
What? Yeah. We'll catch you again when you're bigger, little buddy.
Bye-bye. Oh, I'm snagged. I think I'm snagged on something.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Look down there in the water. It's a double mask. It's
going to
pull me in, boys.
Cut the line.
That was close.
Fellas, I got me a real fish this time.
I think so.
Bring her up.
Bring her up now.
Now, there's a beautiful miniature lake schnook.
Beautiful fish. Nice eyes.
Yeah.
You know, you want
fish.
The big ones, you got to raise them at home.
Yeah.
Well, heck, you can make $300 to $500 a month for no darn work at all.
Is that right?
Grow schnook in your toilet
at night.
Well, no wonder flush culture is growing by leaps and bounds.
You know, you can have all the benefits of commercial schnook farming right there in the privacy of your own bathroom.
All over the world, boys, the demand for toilet-raised fish is growing.
Now ask yourself this question.
Mm-hmm.
Why am I wasting my expensive toilet during hours and hours of darkness while it's not being used?
That's right. You mean to tell me that you can use that useless toilet downtime to work for you?
Uh-huh.
And look, boys, here's what you could use. There's a kit right here in the bottom of this here boat.
Well, darn, let's open her up. What does this say? Schnook spawn.
Oh, woo. Boy, that's bad.
What's that there?
Is that a thermometer?
Thermometer, and here's a net. Well, what the heck do you need a net for? You got the schnook spawn right there.
You don't use it on schnook, boys. It keeps your hair out of the toilet.
They thought of everything.
Oh,
what's the matter with you?
It's got me caught on the schnook hook.
Oh. Yep, get out of your thumb there. Here, just cover it up with some of this gaffer's tape.
They use that to make movies. I've seen them
do really?
It. Oh, really? Yeah.
Well, let's see here. Oh, here's a bumble sticker.
Yeah.
Says, grow local, sell local.
Sell local.
Worst to live by.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hey, boys.
Yeah, what's that?
I see a water spout over there.
No kidding.
Oh, yeah, they always know where the good fishing is.
Well, that's what they say.
On over there.
Get to the oars.
They're pulling, boys.
What's that?
Oh,
looks like a buck or something. Here, give me that snook hook.
Grab it. Grab it out.
Whoa. Yeah, this is a whole buck. It's got some moss off here.
What is it?
Open it up. Open it
wait,
up.
Wait. It's the Book of Bill.
Oh.
Well, let's see what it says.
Book of Bill. Final chapter. Final page.
William Cudlip Penisnose, the last mayor of Billville, found himself clinging to the top of the flagpole, surrounded by a vast body of rising water. He said. I'm finished in politics because I don't have the votes, and I can't go into wrestling because I don't have a mask. Guess I'll just swim, swim, swim. Oh, I'm just a little fishy floating in the sea, and there ain't no hook that's smart enough to catch the likes of me. La 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 la, la 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 la, la 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 la.
On the one hand, we have an image that all life is hanging in the balance, okay? And that we may not be able to do anything about it.
From climate change, yes.
Yeah, from climate change. On the other hand, we got these very smart people out there. First of all, we have one set of, if not smart, at least successful people, the Koch brothers and others, and the what you characterize as libertarians, but mostly the kind of wild followers of Ayn Rand and Mises and von Hayek and so forth, the libertarian. And despite being smart, they're actually willing to help destroy the planet at a faster rate, and they've put a lot of money into elections and things. And so there's a real important alarm bell sounded here about what's happened to our democratic process. You quote these people basically saying they don't believe in democracy, want to destroy the system. So the first half of the book is a compelling argument that these people have put the planet at risk, that they're irresponsible, they've used their money, that they've gained from exploiting the world's resources, and they've used it to destroy this fragile experiment in representative democracy. So very powerful. Then we go into, so you shift from the old industry to the new, and we have these people who believe in artificial intelligence. They believe in, but that part I get. But then they also seem to believe in preserving their bodies so that they could come back at some future. And some of them actually think by the year 30-something, we may have the means of perpetual life that will have solved all the medical problems. And I forget the chief engineer at Google. Yep. What's his name?
Yeah, I'm blocking it at the moment,
oh,
too.
Oh, okay. But anyway, you quote him compellingly.
Ray and, Kurzweil.
Kurzweil, and he thinks he's going to maybe go on forever, you know, and so forth. And yet, they're also contributing to a world in which life may be destroyed. So what do they think? They're going to come back and live on some other planet created? Your book does entertain that. So, you know, when I'm reading
funny
this—
Funny you should mention that. The one thing all these tech guys have in common is they want to leave. They're all building rocket ships as fast as they can.
The black hole could be a gravity vacuum. It pulled the Pegasus right out of orbit. Seems to be a delay in the transfer circuit somewhere. I'll repeat that. The system won't operate, and we're descending rapidly, making adjustments on a course right for Planet X. And there's the planet, that sandy-colored semi-sphere tilting up on the left there. It appears to have one moon, but it's gone around the edge now. It looked like it was all water to me. I don't want to waste this portal loop, so I'll stop here. No sensation of motion. Oh, damn. I think the gravity waves are affecting this recall unit. Anyway, I'll focus out now there on the surface. It looks like Pismo Beach with no water out there, and we're coming in fast. Situation report? I sure wish I had some company and some good dope. Otherwise, I feel fine. Okay.
They said you were crazy, General, but you were right. This is the first contact between man, me, and alien people. Or it will be in a couple of minutes. I sure hope these pictures are going into loop storage, because this recall is still not working very well, and I banged it up getting out. I'm set up looking out across a big oily sump here and away from the sand dune the Pegasus landed in. And by the way, gentlemen, there's another spacecraft over there, and it isn't one of ours. Oh, all right, those moving figures out there, that's them. It's hard to see in the magnetic light. The colors and images are all slippery. They seem to be flying toward me with the sand blowing and billowing up all around them. Well, they are flying. Look at that!
Right. And you spent time with these people in Silicon Valley. They're kind of sanguine in a way about the destruction of life on this planet. And you know, aside from everything else, they're part of the consumer fetish fetishism that we have in the world and the waste of resources and indifference and, you know, sending on the greater model of consumption to India and China and everywhere and so forth. So they're complicit in all this. So on the other hand, they want to preserve their individual lives and have immortality. So then they have this weird fantasy that they're going to construct another planet somewhere, another life somewhere, and that they will be on. And when you were interviewing these people, these are all very smart people. They also went, like you did, to Harvard, you know. I personally am of the prejudice that Harvard trains crooks for Wall Street and everything else and has done is more to mess up this country than any community college in Kansas. But leaving that aside, these are all bright people and they present as bright. When you talk to them and you say, isn't there a disconnect here? And your relative indifference to the well-being of life on this planet and your desire to preserve your own life, what is it going to return to?
Well, I mean, they're believers in some kind of techno-fantasy world that will, you know, where at least they will be able to survive and prosper. And they're completely caught up in that world and not paying much attention to, in fact, they're abetting it. We learn, you know, with each passing day, more about the ways that, say, Google's tools are being used by the oil industry to find yet more hydrocarbons that we can't burn. The place, but I think you're looking for a kind of level of logic that's not here. You have to look for the emotional logic. What is it that, if you're a tech baron, what is it that you most want? You want to be left alone by the government. That's been their cry from the beginning. And, you know, I mean, what did Mark Zuckerberg say when he started Facebook? We're going to move fast and break things. And boy, have they.
He also said about privacy, get over it.
Yeah. So they don't want what they and the Koch brothers and don't want is society. They don't want the rest of us in their way. They want to do what they want to do. And we live in a world, unfortunately, where in the crucial 30 or 40 years, that view kind of won out. Beginning with Reagan, the view that government was the problem, not the solution. Beginning with Maggie Thatcher declaring that there is no such thing as society, there are only individuals. You know, that worldview would have been a problem at any time, but it's a tragedy at the moment when we desperately needed government to step in and do something about climate change.
This week on Lost Notes, we'll introduce you to Suzanne Chani, an avant-garde synth composer, but you already know her work.
Coca-Cola Pop and Pour.
Okay, we're back with Bill McKibben, and the book is called Falter. You know, I don't love the title, but I'm glad that it's on the bestseller list, despite what I thought was an inadequate title. Falter, has the human game begun to play itself out? And the reason I said is, you're not saying we're faltering. You're saying we're about to go over the cliff. And it's a pretty grim view, and unfortunately seems to be a well-documented, accurate, knowledgeable, authoritative book. I mean, this is not a book. You will lose sleep over this book, and rightfully so. But let me push back on the villains here, because, you know, I think there is and you have the libertarians coming up not only with the old fossil fuel industry, but also obviously in Silicon Valley. And it's true of any billionaire these days. They're all going to take Ayn Rand's argument and justify their greed and corruption and not paying enough taxes and everything else. Because, yes, you know, let the pygmies of government get out of my way and I will create wonders. And it's a compelling, opportunistic argument. I also believe there are a lot of, just as I believe there are a lot of, there were a lot of sincere socialists, communists, you know, vegetarians, you know, Christians, lots of people get caught up in these big idea movements because there's some principle there. And I do think the pushback against big government and the respect for privacy and individualism is valid, as you indicate in your book. I'm not telling you something you don't know. But it hit me particularly around, and I'm going to go back to my point about the Clintonistas, because you single out Alan Greenspan, and Alan Greenspan was in the living room with Ayn Rand and, you know, and so forth. And you know, the Koch brothers make an easy target, you know, and actually, by the way, as far as pushback, I don't think we needed to know that his nanny checked his bowel movement and the German nanny. I know it can give an insight.
So here's your last deal, Miss Kresge. Now, which would you rather do? Hit this Jew over the head with a bag of sugar or beat out that rhythm on a drum? Come on, love. I'll take the bag. You mean you're going to trade this 4-foot cube of 18-carat Swiss bullion and the snake knives, Mrs. Presky, all for that little bag?
Oh, yes, I want the bag.
Well, all right then, open it up.
Oh, why, this is a bag of shit.
But it's really great shit, Mrs. Presky.
But
it was from Jane Mayer's wonderful, wonderful book, Dark Money, which I highly recommend.
I know, and okay, I'm just saying.
I thought it was interesting that their nanny, the Koch brothers, left the service of the family to return to Germany when Hitler was elected because she was so happy to go back to
right, okay. As I say, this is pushback, and I think that's a stretch to somehow connect. And also, there were four Koch brothers, and two went in a different direction somewhat, and so they probably had their stools checked by the same nanny. Or maybe they didn't. Maybe she left earlier. But leaving that aside, you know, and I know there isn't much inclination to be kind towards the Koch brothers or so forth.
Hey, kid, isn't that a bottle of Coke I see sticking out of the sand there?
Yes, sir, it's mine. It's mine, sir.
I don't know about you guys, but I'm parched.
Well, I could go for a slug.
A shot of sugar and caffeine.
Better than a wafer and wine, Reverend.
No, it's not for sale. You see, it's mine.
Come on, Abdul, everything's for sale.
But it's mine.
Oh, we'll give you more of this pretty wet Afghan money for it. Duck, you must be thirsty for cash out here.
I'll even give you this shiny new quarter with a choking president on it.
Now, just a minute, Sergeant Blockbuster, but isn't that your good luck piece?
Come on, Reverend Godhead. You don't believe in superstitious nonsense like that, do you?
Well, I don't believe in that kind of superstitious nonsense, no.
This here rifle is my lucky piece.
Ooh.
Here, kid, real American Monopoly money. Buy yourself a government position. Now, give me that.
Hey, all right. No.
Let's roll, Mo.
It is mine.
Hurry up. I'm really hot.
You said it, baby. Not me.
Watch it, soldier.
I am watching it.
Listen, I think we better open that bottle now, troops.
Okay, Pastor. Oh, ouch. I guess twist-off caps haven't been invented here yet. Got a church key, Reverend?
Of course I do, my son. But be careful how you'll use it, huh? Well,
I think he's afraid that our driver might think you're out to circumcise him.
Oh, the unkindest cut of all, huh? These folks sure have a lot to learn. Get ready for some pure Coca-Cola pleasure.
The pause that refreshes.
Things go better with Coca-Cola. To tell them it was mine.
It's that Kooky Coke Show, Saturday night at 8 on XBC. Be there!
It wasn't Ronald Reagan who unleashed Wall Street. It was Bill Clinton and the reversal of Glass-Steagall, you know, the freeing of the banking. I'm not telling you something you don't know. Reagan actually, because of the savings and loan scandal, tightened some banking regulations at the end. It remained for these neoliberals. And yes, it's nice to mention Bernie Sanders, but he's not the Democratic Party, and he got wiped out by these people
last time. If you'll
remember,
it was Bill Clinton who put Alan Greenspan in for yet another fateful term as
exactly
head of the
point,
Federal
sir.
Reserve.
Yes.
I'm just saying that to me, the key political development of my lifetime was Ronald Reagan's election. I think that's what, and I think that Bill Clinton and others just were kind of in the echo of that Big Bang.
Yeah.
And they couldn't, they, I mean, in fact, if you think about it, Bill Clinton finished, I mean, Reagan, there were things Reagan couldn't do because the Democrats at that point were still in the way. He could, you know, Reagan couldn't have gotten the general agreement on tariff and trade through. He probably couldn't have ended welfare as we know it the way that Clinton did. Clinton brought the Democrats along. He was looking for that third middle way, whatever he called it. But basically, it was a continuation and very sad.
I am the president's man. I like what the president likes. If the president likes the Dodgers, I like the Dodgers. When the president stands up in the cold at the Valley Forge, I stand up beside him.
If the president has blue cheese dressing and the baked potato, can I do different?
Yes!
I am the president's man.
If the president sits on a stump, I'd be proud to sit on that stump just in back of him.
At Montenegro Bay,
at Dorcas Point,
in the Philippine War,
at Bomb Spit,
he was there. At Rudy's,
at the Ritz,
at 21,
dancing all night,
he was there.
And I was right behind him,
like a bridge.
Sour cream and giants on your big potato.
Yes, ma'am.
Just like the president.
And that's why it's good to see the reaction that's happening now. That's why it's good to see Elizabeth Warren and, you know, all kinds of people making strong, concentrated case that we need to go in a very different direction.
Yes,
I'm just not sure that we've waited too long.
But you also have former Vice President Biden, who was very much a part of this neoliberal Clintonist phenomena.
It's a fascinating tussle watching it play out now.
But because I respect... I'm not blowing smoke here. I respect you so much, and particularly in this huge, compelling area of what we're going to do about to save the planet. And I don't trust these people because, you know, yes, Alan Greenspan did this and this, but Lawrence Summers, who went on to be head of Harvard, and Robert Rubin, who went to work at Citibank.
You're not going to find me defending them.
I've taken on Mr. Summers
a good deal over the years.
I'm just in my A-plus review of this book, and for people who are going to go out and buy it now, and hopefully they will, and I'm thrilled that it's on the bestseller list, I just want to, you know, that's my job here,
yeah,
too.
Absolutely.
You know, go a little bit further, and because, you know, ending welfare, and this fits into the theme of your book. I mean, you know, what we have to be concerned about is giving a people a way to live in this world and breathe clean air and so forth, and yet, you know, not have to be assembling iPhones at miserable wages and so forth.
I just want to say, a very good thing that's happening right now that unites all these questions is what's going on with the Green New Deal. Because in its attempt to deal with the absolute, have to deal with it, physical problem of climate change, it's talking about much of the kind of political and social reconstruction that you're talking about. You know, it's talking about a federal job guarantee. It's talking about medical care. It's talking about free college education because it understands those as necessary parts of the enormous work, sort of World War II scale work that'll have to be done to deal with the climate crisis.
Right. And that's why Bill Clinton's destruction of the federal poverty program, which called welfare reform, which was a fraud from day one when he was governor in Arkansas and he had Project Success. I've discussed that on this show. I don't want to visit it here. But the, you know, I'm all for bashing the big corporate libertarians who misuse Adam Smith and basically defend monopoly capitalism of an extreme kind rather than really the free market. That's true of these neoliberals who, in fact, you know, champion big government for the super rich is really what it is and screw ordinary people. And I want to bring you to a very important subject in your book relating to climate change, and that's trade and so forth. And again, if I want to push back a little bit on your book, it's a bit to my mind, America-centric. In that, yes, you travel all over the world and you care a lot about Africa, you care a lot about China, you have a world vision, I'm not denying that. But the fact of the matter is, in a country like China or India, they're really talking about catching up to what we were able to exploit. And then the question is, how can we convince them? How can the world, how can they convince their own people? Because after all, if they can't deliver in the short run, they're not going to be around for the long run. And the question is, like with these, I want to just bring up a couple examples from trade. And you point out correctly in your book that it was Bill Clinton who pushed through NAFTA, right? And you know, the fact is, Donald Trump, whatever we think about him, his rewrite of NAFTA actually puts in a few things there, like a guarantee for people assembling cars in Mexico that are going to be imported duty-free, have a $16 wage and for 45%, that local courts have some control in Canada and the U.S. and in Mexico, and not just corporate-controlled courts and so forth. So I'm not saying these change the whole thing, but at least finally we have a trade agreement that worries a little bit about the condition of workers. And I want to pick up two elements that we're going to run out of time, but they're really critical. One is, it seems to me, the big push, because you talk a lot about solar, electric, and that's all great, but I think the ball game in some ways might be decided by what China is right now doing to try to breathe. As you point out, you can't breathe with electric cars and so forth. And yes, the Trump administration is pulling back on that. I happen to have a Chevy Bolt. I love it. But you can't go up the 5 here in California and find a place to charge your car, by the way. And even though under Jerry Brown, we all were for it and there were subsidies, but it's not usable except if you go off on the side roads and take more time. And so China, you know, in these trade agreements, we're not pushing for understanding why they want to get to a different kind of economy in India. So that's one big factor. The other I want to bring up is the controversy you refer to just in a few sentences in your book of nuclear power. And you mentioned, and you've mentioned in the past, if you get into nuclear power, you split the environmental movement in half. And I personally share a lot of the hostility towards the use of nuclear power. I obviously care a lot about the arms race and so forth. I was in Chernobyl. I think I was the first print reporter from the United States, certainly in Chernobyl. Frightens the hell out of me. But I really wonder, in this bleak world that you're describing, whether we need to have a serious discussion about the peaceful use of nuclear power.
So this actually, in some ways, goes to both these questions. I actually don't think it would split the environmental movement. I don't think the environmental movement's paying that much attention to nuclear power. I don't think, and I think the biggest reason for that is no one's going to build these things because they're insanely expensive. You might as well burn $20 bills to generate electricity. It's a different question is whether we should move fast to try and shut down the ones that still remain in this country, the ones that are already built and paid for. The Union of Concerned Scientists is saying maybe let them stay open as long as we can try and keep them safe for a while we're making this transition.
Nukes in the news. And we're talking today with Ned Bent of General Defective. Hello, Ned.
Oh, hello.
Well, Ned, what about these reports that your new hot breeder reactor plant out by the high school is dumping harmfully potential radioactive waste into the river every day?
Well, that's silly, isn't it? There's no truth in that claim whatsoever. And logically, I ask you, how could we possibly do such a thing in broad daylight without being observed?
Oh, you couldn't.
No, of course not. And that's why we do it at night. Oh. You ought to see it. It's like a fireworks display, only without noise.
Yes, but some of the locals say that it's been killing fish.
Well, mm-hmm. It doesn't kill fish.
Oh, good.
I really hope you all heard that out there. There's not one dead fish. I'll repeat that. There's not one dead fish. Well, there's not one living fish within 50 miles of that dump site.
Well, then why all this fallout over nuclear safety?
Bad press and bad statistics.
Oh, I see.
I took a look at the statistics just today on nuclear safety, and boy, they're really bad.
Are these figures available to the public?
Oh, sure. We've got them publicly posted right down there by the hot pile. Anybody can go down there, take a look at them anytime, day or night. It's all the same down there.
Okay, then, Ned, why is there so much opposition to nuclear power, then?
Well, it's contained in the very word nuclear itself.
How's that?
Let me illustrate it to you on this blackboard here. See? Nuclear, N-U-C-L-E-A-R. All right, ironically, these seven separate letters are like the little tiny atoms themselves.
We can move them around to create modern energy, and as we move these letters around, we get R-E-A-L, real, N-U, new, comma, C, question mark?
Real new C.
That's right, that's right. That's what it was when we first brought it out. Oh. And then it starts getting manipulated by the communists.
The what?
The next, by the columnists. And they start moving things around themselves. They come up with dumb questions like, are you clean?
Oh, same letters.
Right, different combinations. Then they answer this question by saying it's unclear. And then they claim that nuclear power is unreal. See? As simple as that.
Oh, I see. It's all their fault.
Yes.
Uh-huh. But come on, Ned. Nothing can be that perfect. You gotta level with us. There's gotta be some hidden cost here in this new source of power.
Oh, well, sure. There's my salary, for instance. Which, by the way, I just earned.
Well, you certainly did. And thank you, Ned. I'll see you in the big lobby.
Oh, thank you. That ought to convince him.
I think so.
Good job.
Nuclear energy. With us, whether we like it or not, for the next 200,000 years.
The good news is, and this is goes to China and India, the price, the engineers have really done an excellent job. The price of a solar panel has dropped 90% in the last decade. It's now by far the cheapest way to generate electrons around most of the world. So China is quickly retooling, partly because of their smog. They're putting up renewable energy at a pace we've never seen before. The most interesting question really is India, which is where China was in terms of energy 15, 20 years ago. It beginning to look like India may try to kind of make its great push forward as the first country that really leapfrogs fossil fuel and relies heavily on renewables just because of the cost. You can generate electricity more cheaply in India, far more cheaply now with new solar than you can by building coal-fired power plants. It doesn't mean that the power of the fossil fuel industry isn't strong, that they're not going to try and, in fact, they're going to lose. I mean, 50 years from now, we're going to power the whole world on sun and wind because it's free. The question is, what kind of world will it be? And if we make that transition quickly, we'll still have some world left. If we go at our current pace, we're going to be powering a broken world with solar panels and wind turbines.
But you've been a moral force in this country for, you know, 30-odd years or so, more so. And it seems to me what well-intentioned liberal folks seem to miss is a little bit of NIMBYism here. You know, hey, what you're doing over there, aside from the fact that you can't breathe, is messing up our planet. You know, and I think it has to come with, and we are willing to make sacrifices commensurate with what we're expecting you to make.
Well, that's, I mean, you know, I helped start 350.org, which has been the first global climate movement. We work in 181 countries, and it's people in those countries that do the work. And climate change is the perfect place to be thinking about this because there's no way, I mean, they don't call it global warming for nothing. There's no way to solve it without everybody playing some role. In fact, the iron law of climate change is the less you did to cause it, the more you suffer. So that's in whose interest it is above all to figure out how to get everybody off fossil fuel. That's what we work for all over the planet. So as I say, I'm optimistic about everything except the timing.
I see their game now. It's going to take some tight astral navigation to avoid being caught in this time trap they've set for us.
I think it's too late, Mark. Take a look at that grav meter. Oh. It's spinning like a Martian weed smoker.
Oh.
Backwards going already, Weir, I think.
Me too, happening what's time, Mr. Doc, me help!
Bobby, unhang. Time, Mark, isn't name my oar. Somehow this about get will.
Mark, what will Mark and his frightened friends do now? Plunging backward through time, pursued by a death's head moth ship and surrounded by deadly plutonium, little Bobby Bunny nears the end of his rope. Don't miss the next fantastic episode. Flight, his in turns, time backward, oh, backward!